Welcome, listeners, one and all. Welcome to Regency Rumours, the podcast where a British-American couple recap and discuss Bridgerton, the Regency Netflix show. I'm Jordan.
And I'm Kayla. And we are excited for our first Beyond Bridgerton episode. If you're new to the podcast or you've not listened in a while, because we haven't recorded anything in a while, then Beyond Bridgerton is a short series we're doing before the release of season 2 in May. I think all of us were shocked that we were going to have to wait all the way until May for this new season. So we thought it'd be fun to do a few episodes in the meantime while we are all patiently waiting. So we're releasing an episode once a month between now and May where we explore the real Regency culture that inspired Bridgerton. So typically we're a recap podcast, but for this series, we're going to be doing some fun interviews on fashion, women's lives, and disability in the Regency era by more, let's say, knowledgeable people than us on these subjects.
Yeah, and those are going to be three separate episodes, just in case that's confusing at all. But we've got some really great guests that come on and speak with us about their topic of interest, which is really cool.
I feel like a lot of people like the kind of history section when we do the history moment on the recaps. And every time we're like, we're not an expert. And it's great that we're actually going to like have an expert on here for three different episodes that can answer some of the questions that we've had about like dowries and marriage and fashion that inspired Bridgerton. So I'm excited.
Yeah. So before we get started, if you're wanting some more chat about the upcoming season of Bridgerton, do check out our last episode. Here, I need to mention TikTok, YouTube, and some of our videos.
You are so great at promoting this podcast.
So we're on TikTok, which is something that I don't touch. I literally...
You're on TikTok.
I shouldn't be.
You're in videos on TikTok. I've shown you a few.
I'm too old to be on TikTok.
You're not too old. There are plenty of other people around-ish our age on there.
That's so comforting. But yeah, so we are on TikTok. We are on the YouTubes.
So we are now on YouTube. I started a YouTube channel about a year ago. It's a small channel, but it's been really fun to make different kinds of content. So I've been making some commentary style videos about historically inspired aspects of the Regency era. So I did a video on why people were so obsessed with water and towns like Bath and drinking salt water and really weird water remedies. So I've got a video in there about that, about the real life persuasion, a couple that were a lot like Anne and Captain Wentworth, and some other Bridgerton content. Oh, and we made our most recent video is that we made some Gilded Age inspired recipes that were inspired by the show, and we explore some French recipes from an 1880s cookbook. So definitely check out our YouTube channel. It's the same as the podcast here, Regency Rumors. So our first guest here for the Beyond Bridgerton series is Richie Wedge, and he is a sewist. Is sewist the right word? It's not tailor.
I think we did look this up, and I keep forgetting, but I think it was seamster.
Seamster, because seamstress is obviously the female equivalent, but seamster doesn't seem like a word, and sewist doesn't seem right.
No, it's not sewist. I think you made that one up, to be honest. But seamster is kind of like a teamster, which, if I remember rightly, is kind of like the when you have a team of horses pulling a coach, right? There'd be somebody looking after the horses on a coach. There'd be like a teamster. I don't know. Anyway, seamster. So a seamster. That's what we found anyway when we looked it up. But it is interesting because you don't have very many of these female occupations that we struggle to change into a male-oriented occupation name.
Yeah, it's mostly the opposite, really.
It is mostly the opposite, right? So that's really interesting anyway. So
yes, he's a Regency fashion enthusiast. He is a former contestant on the Great British Sewing Bee, which if you are from anywhere outside the UK is kind of like the sewing equivalent of the Great British Bake Off or the Great British Baking Show for Americans. So yes, we're excited to have him on here and we are going to talk Regency fashion. He has an upcoming ball coming in May, so perfect for the premiere of Bridgerton. So you won't want to miss him giving the details of the ball that he is planning. It sounds like it's going to be a load of fun. And if we could get a costume ready for you, we'd go. We really need to step up our game there with the Regency menswear.
Yes, it's been a bit of a challenge, but we do talk a little bit more about that in the interview. So listen on and enjoy.
Should start out asking, are you a Bridgerton fan? And if so, are you excited for the new season coming up? What is kind of your favorite Regency thing to watch?
Yeah, of course, I'm a big Bridgerton fan. I'm a big Bridgerton and Queen Charlotte fan as well. And I know it's kind of the mix between the two universes. Yeah, I do love it. I think it came at a great time, didn't it? It was towards the end of the first year of the lockdown, I think. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people were at home and it was just something really exciting, really bright, something really fun, a bit of scandal. I mean, who doesn't love scandal? And then, yeah, obviously it was captivating, wasn't it? So most people really got into it. I know so many people that got into it. It's one of those brilliant programs. Season 3 is coming out soon, so I'm very excited.
Yeah, it definitely felt like for me, I grew up watching a load of different period dramas and loved different, you know, Jane Austen adaptations. And it really felt like that Bridgerton was the kind of biggest show to put the Regency era into the mainstream like this. I think there's a lot of people that maybe weren't as exposed to Jane Austen or the period that Bridgerton has brought in a new crowd of people that are doing things like costuming and going to balls and things that maybe never would have before. So I think it's a really cool thing to see kind of the stuff that we enjoyed reading and watching when we were younger, the general mainstream public be into it. So
yeah, and they've definitely kept a lot of the nuances of like a Jane Austen book, haven't they? Because she was great, wasn't she? Was like the writing she did, she always had a bit of scandal in there or a bit of like conflict, and they've done it but just in a bit of a more modern style. So
yeah,
not everyone, but a lot of people know who Jane Austen is. I mean, she's on our £10 note, I believe. A lot of people know, but how many people have actually read Jane Austen? Yeah, it's a great way to almost put her back on the map, I think, as well.
And I think it's interesting for me because maybe not obviously, but I wasn't really in this crowd when I was younger. It wasn't something that kind of, I guess, was encouraged or even suggested really when I was younger to watch. So it was when I kind of, you know, really met Kayla and had a relationship here that I really started kind of getting into them and seeing the period dramas for, you know, beyond that really basic view that a lot of people will have of the stories and things. So I think it's been good to see that it's been broadening access for more people to really kind of see these fun worlds. And as you said, when it first came out, it was this time of period of life where everybody really needed something fun and bright and just to engage with. So it was good like that.
It definitely came at a great time, didn't it? But yeah, of course, like you say, the Jane Austen, everyone I think thinks like Pride and Prejudice is a bit stuffy. When you get into it and you know about it, it's actually brilliant. The subtle nuances of how she says things. And of course, now we don't really know about the rudeness that people could do in a Jane Austen book would have been scandalous back then. And to us, it's just talking to someone, but that they weren't introduced to each other, so it was like, oh my god, that is scandal. But knowing about it, and I'm sure you do as well, know about, it was and Pride and Prejudice is one of my favorites. I watched many versions of it many times, probably more than I should admit to.
Would you say that that's maybe where you got interested in historical clothing? Is it through maybe watching period dramas?
Definitely. I mean, Pride and Prejudice is probably where I got into the Regency fashions. But before that, I grew up where my mom and I used to watch a lot of Catherine Cookson, which isn't really that old. But we used to watch a lot of like older programs and Miss Marple and a lot of older programs. So I was always kind of brought up with it. Mm. I mean, Shrewsbury is really well known, my hometown, for a version of The Christmas Carol. So it's a brilliant version as well. I watch it every Christmas Eve. So I think I've always kind of been around it. I live in a very historical town. it's very beautiful. So yeah, I'm gonna say a lot of TV shows did push me into the love of the fashion.
How long have you been doing historical fashion sewing, I guess?
18 years, maybe a little bit longer. Not as much as I do now. Nowhere near. I kind of dip in and out. I do quite a lot of different crafts. Sewing's always stayed very steady for me. But yeah, I've been doing that from the historical is actually quite a short period of time. I'm going to say 5-6 years, maybe. Not a great deal of time. In the grand scheme of things, it's quite a short amount of time. And there's so much to learn. The construction is mind-bogglingly different than today.
Nowadays, it is so insane to see how much historical costuming and sewing has blown up on, you know, Instagram, TikTok, how many people are creating and sharing the clothing that they're making. I think it's so interesting to see all the different intricate costumes and things that people are creating for events and just in their daily lives.
Yeah, and I do think the kind of like costume bounding, history bounding,
yeah.
What is it called? That is massive as well, isn't it? The crossover between the two. Instagram, I'm big on it. Well, I love Instagram. There is a lot of costumers on there. And some of the things they make are just insane. I don't even know how they make them and how historically accurate they make them. There is more resources out there now, but there isn't a great deal per se compared to most other things of how to sew things correctly or how the fit should be. A lot of it is kind of lost in time as well. So we are just looking at paintings, well, portraits, and seeing how that fit, how it would have fit on a more average person rather than a very wealthy person. It is a massive minefield. And also then, what era do you choose? How can you choose one era? I mean, Regency is such a small amount of time, but yeah, that's where I seem to be stuck.
Well, that's really interesting, actually, and kind of brings me on to the next question. So you won the Great British Sewing Bee in 2022. So throughout that competition, did you find yourself drawn to any kind of historical inspirations at all? Do you feel that, like, the interest that you have in the historical fashion, can it come out through your modern designs at all? Is that something that you found?
Yes, I was on the season 8 of the Great British Sewing Bee. And yeah, even on the show, I'm not sure if you've watched it, but I made a pair of breeches, which I don't really want to talk about. They were awful. It was so bad. Even on the show, I was constantly thinking of like Georgian ways they would have done things and trying to put inspiration into the things I made on there. But my modern clothing that I wear now, like day to day, I wear Victorian trousers. I wear a lot of shirts. I think there's a great merging. You see it a lot in fashion. If you look at modern fashion now, there's definitely the Bridgerton style, the Empire waist, where it's very high into a lot of dresses. The sheer dresses, I think, was very almost reminiscent of Regency. And I'm sure Bridgerton has a lot to explain for that, actually. Mm-hmm. Bringing into it. But you can see it a lot in modern fashion, how they still use a lot of historical techniques and inspirations to modern eye. You can't really see it, but I think I pick up on it quite a lot.
What would you say your personally most inspiring piece that you've made, something that maybe had a special meaning for you that we wouldn't know just from looking at it, something that you really loved being able to make?
I've got several pieces of things that I really enjoyed. My biggest one, I made pretty much all of it was made historically accurate with historical methods. The way it was constructed was historical. The way it was sewn was historical. The fit was very historical. I did like a whole outfit from corset, chemise, shift, chemisette, a bonnet I made. I made the whole outfit out of it. And that is my favorite thing, I think, because I put so much work into it and made it so historical accurate that it's one of my favorite pieces. A lot of people wouldn't know. You could think like, oh, it was machine sewn, or which would have been a lot quicker to do. But it was very... very satisfying making it all from scratch and to the historical way. And I've not done it since because it did take, I was making it in lockdown and it did take years to make. I don't know how they did it.
Wow.
So quick.
We had, we'd kind of considered learning to do some kind of Regency sewing over COVID. And it's a bit of a feat. Like, I feel like you definitely have to have a talent to be able to do something like that. It's not easy.
I mean, it's like most things, isn't it? I mean, I'm not very good at quilting, but it is all sewing, isn't it? And it's just learning the techniques of the different ways of doing it. So if you can sew modern day clothes, you can definitely sew Regency clothes when you know and how it's constructed. It isn't that difficult, but I'm going to say that because I know how to do it.
Yeah.
I do encourage everyone to have a go, though, even something very small.
You know, you mentioned that you kind of like your Victorian kind of style as well, but what would you say about Regency fashion, something that would fit in a shot of Bridgerton that appeals to you the most?
I guess it's because it's a TV show as well. I really enjoy their use of colour that they use. So a lot of the men wear like velvet jackets, which I'm not 100% sure on this, but I don't think there's many velvet historical jackets out there for men anyway. And I just love the way they use them, and everyone's got their certain colours. Every family seems to have their certain colours as well, like the more, it's rude to say, a bit more khaki in some families. And then like Daphne's in beautiful white and she's flowing ground and she looks so elegant. And then Eloise is there in her high ruffled tomboyish clothes. But yeah, I enjoy all the fashion in it, to be honest.
I loved when Bridgerton came out and it was kind of this over-the-top version of Regency fashion, because on one end I love historically accurate things and some of the period dramas in the past, but I think Bridgerton went almost to another level where it's like they want you to be aware that it's not, you know, historically accurate, and it takes from these inspirations and these different kind of, you know, colors that can symbolize different meanings in the characters' lives and things. And so I think it's really interesting nowadays, because they're green lighting more things like Bridgerton, that you can see this mix of like really historically accurate costumes like the one in the latest Emma, all the way to Bridgerton with these kind of elaborate outfits, and we can kind of see a mix of those today. I think it's really nice that that's a thing nowadays.
Even in the Regency, a lot of people were over the top, but not the style of Bridgerton. They use a lot of modern fabrics and modern cuts in their clothes. But I think that is another reason why it's so appealing, isn't it? Because you can kind of relate. I mean, you can tell it's definitely a Regency style show, but then you can be like, oh, but that fabric's really nice. Or it doesn't look like a stuffy old, like I said, like a Jane Austen adaptation.
So that's actually an interesting kind of way to lead him on to the next question then. So you're planning a ball for May in 2024, which is really exciting. But around that, could you like talk a little bit about the fashion of the actual Regency era then, and maybe how fashion and the importance of what you were wearing during events like a ball or a concert in that period, how would that have impacted how people would show up to a ball such as the one that you're planning?
So obviously I'm not sure how much you know about in general the Georgian period. It was all very wide hoops, big panniers, and then it very quickly went into the Regency fashion, which is Greek columns, basically. It's lung down, high bust. Like in a ball setting, people that wore very luxury like silks and very expensive cottons, highly embroidered, they were always seen as the fashionistas or the highlight or the most wealthy people, really. A social status was a massive part of balls, and the more fabric you had or the more expensive it was, the more revered you were. Also country balls, the fashions would have taken years to melt down. It almost happens kind of today, actually. If you're in the country, you don't get all the latest fashion so quickly as you do in the city. Yeah, in a ball sense, it would be, people would know your status very quickly by what you wore.
Because we kind of see a little bit of that in some of the shows, right, in terms of going to the modiste and having the new outfits made and things. So would they have new dresses made as often as we see in the films and the shows?
I don't think as much as Bridgerton, but there is an account of a woman that did tally every dress she had in her life, which I think was more Georgian. Maybe it was into the Regency era. If you were insanely wealthy, you probably would have had a new dress done for a season, or a new wardrobe done for a season. But you would definitely rewear a lot of things or restyle them. You notice quite a lot in the historical sense that they'd take trimming off and put new trimming on, or they'd cut it a different length on the skirt because fashions changed slightly. A lot of modification did happen, or you'd pass it on to your sister or a friend and you'd swap dresses, and then you've got a new dress and she's got a new dress. It was a lot of reusing. People really, really repaired and reused their dresses unless they were very wealthy.
In terms of the men, was there kind of a difference in the way they dress for the day and then for a ball? Would there have been different materials used in the jackets and things for something like a ball compared to just going out during the day or maybe going riding?
Yeah, definitely. So for a ball wear, it'd be a lot of silk. The cravat color changed. So during the day, it was acceptable to wear colored cravats. In the evening, it was always white at a ball, always. Yeah. And then obviously they'd have fancy waistcoats and things, but again, status symbol, but most people would wear silk. So it'd be silk stockings, silk breeches, silk jackets, silk waistcoat. It's very opulent, isn't it? During the day, you would wear velvets, wools, cottons. There's a fabric called nankeen, which is, it's gone now, but it was like a buff colored, you see it quite a lot in Jane Austen, a buff colored breeches that people would wear quite a lot for horse riding because it was hard wearing.
Okay.
Leather breeches even.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so there was quite a lot. And the same with the women's wear. There is quite a big difference between day wear and then also evening wear.
When we see some of the high collars in ones like Emma and things, how would they have gotten the collars to stand up like that for the men?
Okay, so the ones in Emma are teeny bit too high, just a little bit, especially on Mr. Knightley. It is just a tiny bit too high.
Well, that's good to know, because I thought that as well. I'm like, these are so high.
It's not too high. It's only a tiny bit too high. But he was wealthy, and they were showing his status of having a white collar that he could keep clean. So he obviously had a lot of money, he had maids, and he obviously sent his shirts off to be starched. So there were many services where they would be sent off and starched, and it's such a lengthy process. I've tried it myself. I can never get it as good as they do on the TV shows. But back then, a shirt would have been worn once, and you would wear it during the day, and it would have been starched, and then you'd wear another one in the evening that would also have been starched, because they crumple during the day. You want to look your best, but it's a very complex process, actually, to starch the collar into that perfect stiff shape.
Wow, interesting.
I'm always so amazed at the people who do kind of the Elizabethan collars, how they today, like when they're recreating them, how they're able to make them stand up and stuff. I'm like, wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, it's all. I have actually looked into it a little bit in the past, but yeah, it's so complex. And I think they used to use heated rollers.
That's what I've heard, yeah.
Yeah, which is outrageous, isn't it? But again, fashions change, don't they? And it isn't too dissimilar to the Regency, is it, of where the opulence of wearing a collar like that is. There's not much difference in having a very heavily starched white collar either.
So could you walk us through the typical happenings of a Regency ball? What would a night out dancing in an assembly hall have been like? What are some of the elements you're bringing to the Bridgetown ball, and are there any modern aspects that you'll be incorporating?
So a typical Regency style ball, you would turn up, it was basically a great meeting place to find a husband or socialize with young people. A lot of the balls were very young focused. If you've got to think that during the day, women always were chaperoned, and the same at a ball, they would have been chaperoned, but they would never have the opportunity to be introduced to someone. So it was a great way to meet people, get introductions, and obviously find a husband, which was apparently the ultimate goal for every woman. But yeah, that's the big part of the ball. There would be rooms at the ball, of course, where people would play card games and have fun. Then there'd be rooms with food and drink, and then there'd be dancing, and then there'd be gossiping, I'm sure. I would have loved to have gone to one. I'm not going to lie.
Because some of them would last all night, wouldn't they?
Yeah, and you see that quite often in a lot of film adaptations where they do last. They last till like the morning, which I can't do that now. But I guess maybe they arrived later. I'm not too sure on the arriving time. I don't think it would have been a 7 p.m. BYOB affair. But the ball that we're hosting is, it's going to be very similar in the way it's done. Obviously, you don't need to be chaperoned. You're more than welcome to come alone. But we're taking it very Bridgerton style. So it's going to be very over the top, very opulent. It's going to have the same feel as a Regency ball, but a lot more modern and fun is our big thing. A ball you'd have these days, Regency style, you would generally have a caller or a dance practice before the ball. And we're not doing that. We're going to make it very simple. So it is going to be like Bridgerton. Obviously not very complex dances like they do, but we will have a caller. People will have a chance to dance and do it in the Jane Austen style, but it's going to be simplified, a bit more modern, because the band we have is actually like a Bridgerton band. It's a string quartet, and they're going to be playing modern music, but to an old style.
Oh, fun. So that is very Bridgerton, kind of. Mm-hmm. Having the modern music, but make it feel like it's in the Regency era.
Yeah, when I watched Bridgerton, that is the first time I've ever seen it done, and I was so wowed. it really impressed me how they could do a Madonna song into a Regency style, and they could dance Regency style to it as well, which is, it just kind of blew my mind.
Yeah, it's really fun. There's it's not Regency, but there's a few different covers on YouTube of like medieval style covers of songs, and I always find those really fun to listen to, because they, you know, it's like instruments are so different to what they would use in the modern songs and things, so it's really cool to kind of see those elements come together, and you get to keep the historical things alive in that sense, you know, you're bringing them to the modern day. And I think that's one of the really cool things about hosting a ball. It's, you know, it is this traditional thing. You know, sometimes people are going to think, oh, you know, we don't do anything like that anymore. So it's nice to kind of really have that, you know, today.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you going back to the older style songs, I think A Knight's Tale were one of the first movies to actually do that, which I didn't know about until recently when I've been telling everyone about it. I think that does not everyone ever want to go to a ball, or at least know what it's like? Because I'd always be really intrigued, and that's why we kind of did it. Was people asked me like, oh, I really want to make a Bridgerton style dress, but I'm not going to wear it to the supermarket. So that's why we kind of decided to do it, and everyone can have fun, and they can come in a bit not knowing what to expect. And it not being very formal, like a very traditional ball.
Yeah, and I think that is really cool, because society as a whole, in terms of the fashion that we wear, obviously you can dress up a little bit and be a bit more formal, but sometimes, I mean, I know I feel it myself, you feel like you need an occasion, you need some reason to wear a waistcoat. I work from home, so I don't go to the office in a suit or anything like that. So that does mean that putting a waistcoat to go down to the corner shop is, some people might look at you funny for it. So it is nice to give people the opportunity to wear the costumes and things that they've made and designed.
And I think especially too in this day of like fast fashion as well, where there's so many, you know, for the average person, there's a lot of stuff that's mass produced. So we're wearing very similar clothes on day to day, so it's nice if people are able to make their own outfit for something like this.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm one of those people that go to the corner shop in a waistcoat.
I love it.
I like that people pay a bit more attention. And I always think that I love dressing up. Whenever when you put on a suit or a really wonderful dress and go to a wedding, you always feel, I always think you feel more. You feel like special, a bit more powerful.
Yeah.
And I'd like to do that every day.
I mean, that's great. It really is. Because I think in some ways I do wish I did it more. Maybe I just should. And I guess it's just a bit of a fear response, isn't it? You're like, oh, what are people going to say? What are people going to think? In some ways, you shouldn't care and just do it. And I think that's pretty important for people to be able to try.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it is one of those things. People do say things and people do stare, especially dressed up in Regency attire. They do definitely look and stare. But the most part is people are actually very friendly, and they want to know what you're doing. And a lot of the younger guys will walk past and be like, good day to you, sir. And it is always very fun. And I've never had anyone actually be very mean to me probably the meanest is people are like, why are you wearing tights? Which they do have a good point.
Is there a particular period drama that you really love the costuming in? Is there a favorite piece from a film or a TV show that really stands out in your memory?
Yeah, so you actually picked up on it earlier. The Emma 2020 is phenomenal. Everything in it is just incredible. I mean, it's not 100% accurate all the way through, but you can't really be anymore. Almost everything she wears is from a fashion plate or a painting. You see it almost everywhere. The whole film, the whole aspect of it, the whole thing is just beautiful. The whole thing. I definitely recommend watching it if you want to do very traditional Regency. Emma is a rich, spoiled kid in it, so she definitely wears the best fashions, and it's brilliant. Definitely.
For me, the pink Spencer is what sticks out in my mind. I don't know if you went to the Jane Austen Festival this year.
I did.
Oh, I did as well. I just was a bystander, but I definitely have seen a few people kind of recreate versions of that. And up close, when you see people who have actually made that, it's so intricate. I don't know how they've done it, but it's so neat to see that.
Yeah, definitely. And that is, it's an iconic, I'm not sure it's where the original is from. I think it's from the Met, but it is an iconic piece of Regency. The Spencer is just incredible. It's rouleau, so you make a tube of fabric by hand sewing it with a ladder stitch, which takes forever. I have done it. And then you have to hand sew it all on into the intricate pattern that they do. Hamilton actually, during lockdown, released a Spencer pattern, which is very similar. So if anyone wants to actually have a go, the Hamilton Spencer pattern is very close to the pink one in Emma.
Oh, I didn't know that. I remember them putting that out, but I didn't even link the two. So that's really cool.
It is very cool. The other dresses, and I definitely want to say this, is if you've ever seen Sleepy Hollow, she wears a black and white Georgian dress.
Yes, I know which one and you're talking about.
I only found out a couple of years ago that the designers actually made it out of Sharpies. They colored the black stripes on the dress, all of it, in Sharpies, which is just incredible.
Like a pin?
Yeah, yeah.
No way.
And it's actually a black stripe, and then it's got a green edging next to it. That dress just makes it even more fabulous for me now. And obviously that film's great as well. The fashion in that's great. It's not 100%, obviously. It's not actually that close. But yeah, it's a good film as well.
Yeah. I'll be honest and say I've never seen it. We need to watch it at some point.
Or just Google the black and white Christina Ricci Sharpie dress.
So, you know, things, you've mentioned it a couple of times, and we know that things can't be fully historically accurate. And shows like Bridgerton and Queen Charlotte are not really known to have that accuracy, but they have helped catapult the Georgian or the Regency era into kind of mainstream culture. So what impact do you see these kinds of shows having on the future of history bounding or kind of costume making in general?
We have mentioned it a lot, but I do think it has already crept in to modern culture. If you sew, there is I think the Fold line, I can't remember the pattern company, they brought out a dress and it's called the Daphne dress. You can't get any closer than that, really, can you? And it's a high-waisted empire style dress, which is pretty accurate as well. It's exactly not bad. But that's a modern sewing pattern, and it is already creeping into fashion. You see it quite a lot. And I mean, the way people dress, I mean, I'm sure there was a ringlet phase not that long ago as well. It is funny, isn't it, how you see people watch something like Bridgerton and Queen Charlotte, like, I'm sorry, but it's just incredible. The hair. I wish that would come back.
Jordan really thought, because we reviewed episodes of Queen Charlotte, and he really thought that the wigs were real hair. I was
it was just a brief moment where I was like, is that real hair or is it a wig? And Kayla laughed at me because she was like, it's obviously a wig.
It would be a lot of hair. But it's, again, they did have, I mean, maybe not so opulent as us, but they did have big hairstyles. There was lots of satirical drawings of people with massive wigs and people behind them carrying it or holding it up. So they did actually do it. And that will never come back, I know. And the big pocket hoops won't come back like Queen Charlotte, which is really sad. If I could wear Regency every day, I probably would. But I don't think I can go to work and bake in my Regency attire and be comfortable.
I think Regency is such a good era, too. It's just this, you were saying earlier, that, you know, it was such a short amount of time, but it was like this pocket of time where it seemed like, in a lot of ways, women's style anyways was a bit more freeing and looked comfortable compared to the styles that came before and then afterwards, kind of Victorian and Edwardian. The times I've worn Regency dresses anyways, they've been very kind of comfortable, and I feel like running through a meadow or something.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, the menswear isn't that everyone's like, oh, you're wearing breeches, they must be really uncomfortable. They're actually really nice. I mean, if you've ever worn high-waisted trousers, and I'm sure most women that are listening to this will be like, yes, high-waisted trousers are the best thing in the world. And breeches are just high-waisted trousers. The same with the jackets are really, they're really comfortable. The women's clothes, obviously, yeah, we have the Georgian big pocket hoops. You can't really do too much. I mean, well, I'm sure you could. And then obviously the Regency thing is that even the stays that they wear are very just to push your bust higher. There's no compression on the body with them. They're just to fit your body and just lift the bust, which I've made them for quite a few people who actually wear them under modern clothes because it's much more comfortable than a bra.
Really?
Yeah. And they love them much more. And stays are pretty much the same. They kind of they shape your body. They don't move anything round really too much. They just kind of move your flesh round to give it more of a conical shape. But then the Victorians came along and they loved a tight lace. Well, some people did. It's not all people, but yeah, they compressed a little bit more. But I've had this argument before about corsets that it's not too dissimilar than carrying a child. I mean, your organs all move around in your body and it's not too bad. They do it from an early age, but that's another tangent for another time.
Yeah, I've worn corsets for like historical costuming with Victorian dresses, but I've never worn stays. I mean, corsets, I feel like they helped me have a very good posture. But the stays do look comfortable when I've seen them on people. They, or at least they do the same job as what your bra would do. So.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, stays are that thing as well. They've got straps. Well, most of them do. So they push your shoulders back, which makes you stand in a very different manner. They're not really compressing anything. They're more for bust and a little bit of shaping. So stays are very comfortable. I mean, yeah, stays are great. They are much, much better than the Victorian ones.
So kind of leading on to that, so are there any tips or advice that you give people for wanting to get into making their own Regency attire for people like us? I think there is a lot of resources out there for women wanting to learn how to make Regency dresses. But for Jordan, we've kind of been looking into maybe making a costume for him. And it is tough to get started, to know where to get started on something like that.
Yeah, so the women's wear is very, I do say that, it's very simple. It's not too complicated, the women's wear, but the men's wear is tailoring, basically. So it does become a whole new world. And it does take me quite a long time. Fit is very key as well. It depends how historical you want to go. If you want to go quite down the rabbit hole, then I'd definitely look into tailoring a lot more, buy a tailoring book for menswear. Women's wear is quite easy. And I mean, there are a lot of resources. There are a lot of patterns for women's wear. It's quite a process to learn how to do any tailoring in menswear. I always tell people to start with a waistcoat for men and go from there, because the waistcoat's pretty easy and you learn a little bit of tailoring in it. And then the jacket goes forward, and then it's a little bit more. If you ever made coats before, it's not too dissimilar.
I think a waistcoat was the thing that we were looking at first. I do like a waistcoat. I think it's today, I think the waistcoat is a little bit more individual. It lets you really kind of express your personal preference in clothing, right? I think it's a forgiving, I guess, in a way, in the patterns that you do on the waistcoats and things. So yeah, I think that would be a good place to start. And we have looked, but you know, we're complete beginners, so it would be
I am actually going to on Instagram release a section on beginner sewing patterns and more less historical patterns and then more historical patterns, and I'm trying to do it quite an easy step for people to go forward. So yeah, when I release it, definitely have a look.
That's fantastic. Yeah, we'll keep an eye out for that.
There isn't a great deal of menswear out there, but what there is a lot of the patterns are very good.
Do you have a favorite fabric to work with, and why would you say that it's your favorite?
100% wool. It's just real wool is the best fabric. So forgiving. If you make a mistake, you can unpick it. It's very easy. You can stretch it into, so a lot of tailoring, you stretch the fabric to fit around the body, because no one is square or round or flat. Everyone's got bumps and lumps, and a little bit of stretching of the fabric, say over the chest on a men's coat, or make it lay better, or you can shrink it as well. So you can shrink the fabric into places where you don't want it to stretch as much. It is the best fabric, and it's both cool and warm, because it's 100% and generally waterproof as well, or to an extent.
Are there kind of historical fabrics on the other? Is something like muslin hard to work with, because we hear about muslin and the Regency era in like Northanger Abbey and them needing to like layer the fabric and that sort of thing. Is it a hard fabric to work with?
So modern muslin is nothing like the Regency muslin. They actually have lost the technique, and I think even the plant that it was made from is gone.
Oh, wow.
So it was a very dense, very light fabric. It's basically like maybe a dense foil or a very light lawn fabric. So no, it's very easy to work with. I would not work with muslin personally, but a lawn or a voile, yeah, they're very easy to work with. They're very stable. So that's why women's wear is much easier to make than men's. there are so few patterns on women's clothes as well. Buying a nice, easy, stable fabric and then throwing it together is quite easy.
Is there a technique or like a particular task, I guess, in sewing that you think that people should do more of today?
Hand sewing, I think. That's a technique and a skill that people kind of have lost. Everything's just on the machine. They'll top stitch everything. And I think you can get such a better finish if you hand sew some things. I mean, don't get me wrong. I machine sew pretty much everything I make now. and I even overlock it. So I know the purists that are going to want to shoot me. But I don't do it historical. But yeah, hand sewing, again, like tailoring, there's a lot of hand sewing that goes into it. We rush too much. We always want things finished. Mm. I think people need to slow down, really enjoy the process and look at it and take their time.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. you mentioned it briefly before, Kayla, but the kind of fast fashion, like everybody today, you just expect everything immediately, don't you? Even like deliveries, you want it the next day and things. So I think that's probably a good piece of advice there. Not necessarily technique, but is there a historical piece of clothing that you think should make a comeback in 2024?
Again, I've already mentioned it. High-waisted trousers for men. They are, honestly, I just recommend anyone to wear them. They're so comfortable. They're so comfortable. It's definitely one thing that Victorian, or maybe quote me on this, but Victorian started the men's high-waisted long trouser anyway. Mm. And I love the side of it. Maybe I'm a bit biased because all my trousers are high-waisted. And
do you make them then?
Yeah, I do. And it's one thing that, obviously, being a chef, I wear chef trousers and they're so uncomfortable. Yeah. I just find them really bizarre now. Not sitting on my weight. I'm wearing braces as well, belts. I always found pointless and I could never wear them. So yeah, it's probably a very, I'm sure people are thinking I should come up with something much better, but high-waisted men's trousers all the way.
I mean, hey, fair enough. To be fair, I've always wanted to kind of try them just to see what it would be like. Got a bit of a strange thing with certain, you know, shirts that are a bit more historically patterned and things, like they sit on me differently and then I kind of go, oh, I don't know if I like this. So I think it would be a very strange experience, but you know, you should definitely try them out.
Any historical clothing, the first time you put it on is always very strange. Again, with the men's, like the women's clothes, the shoulders are pushed much more backwards. And I guess if you wear it like that from being a child, it's going to be your natural posture. Mm. And we're all very hunched over now as well, aren't we?
Yeah.
So when you wear it for the first time, it is bizarre. I think most historical clothing should make a comeback at some point. Well, most of it. Let's not. Yeah, most of it.
I definitely think just the wearing historical clothing or vintage clothing, like just people feeling like they can individualize their clothes, I think should make a comeback. And it kind of has. I know over lockdown, I got kind of into 1940s and 50s doing vintage, trying vintage hairstyles and things like that. I know there's a lot of discourse about people talking about wearing hats again. Like, why don't we wear hats anymore? Bring back hats.
Yeah.
And just, you know, stuff like that. The chains that women used to wear to put cardigans over their shoulder and stuff. There were so many different kind of accessories and things that were practical that nowadays we don't use, and they were also fashion pieces. So it would be nice to kind of bring back some of those things where people can feel very individualized.
Definitely. And as you say, you do see it a little bit more. There's a lot more of the 40s, 50s theme is coming back a little. I mean, I dress in quite a lot of a 40s, 50s theme. It's a good thing about Victorian trousers, they kind of travel through. Men's fashion did change too dramatically. Can we please bring back hats? I love hats as well. So yeah, definitely.
So for your ball that's coming in May 2024, are you wearing a specific outfit?
I've been asked this quite a lot, actually. I get asked it all the time. I have changed my mind so far 3 times. So I have no idea what it's going to be like when I actually get to, I want something quite over the top. So I want something Bridgerton, but probably very, very over the top. It's not like their average men's wear in Bridgerton, probably more like the women's wear in style of pattern. And I want lots of diamonds on it. I'm definitely going big. It's the one time where I can really do it the best. But I know I keep changing my mind. I have my shape that I want to go for of like outfit. But I keep changing my mind too many times. And I'll probably change it again.
I mean, I guess that's the benefit of being involved in making it yourself, right? Like you can really design it exactly how you want, and you can look exactly as you imagined it.
Yeah, exactly. And again, because we're not playing to that super historical accurate aspect, I can do something very fun. I mean, I probably won't be able to wear it to many other things, but yeah, you can go a bit wild with it. And that's kind of what I want everyone to do. I want everyone to completely go maybe outside their comfort zone or just go absolutely bonkers. Like, whatever you want to do, just do it.
Well, I think if we can sort out Jordan an outfit by that time, we might be able to attend. So
I know that'd be amazing. I mean, the other thing is that we said it's not just for people that sew either. It's more, I'm thinking if you go to a charity shop and upcycle a dress or... I don't know, put some feathers in your hair, do a little bit of sewing on something, add some trim. That's the kind of thing we want. We kind of want it inclusive for everyone. That's our big thing. Pride, not prejudiced.
Thank you so much for speaking with us today, Richie. Really appreciated getting your kind of thoughts on some of the questions that we had about the fashion of the time. So how about you tell us a little bit more about the ball? How might people be able to attend? Where could they find out more information if they're interested? And you know, where and when is it?
Yeah, of course. So it is May 18th, 2024. It's in Madeley, Telford. So it's right by Ironbridge, which I don't know if people know. It's got Blist Hill. It's a very popular Victorian town. It's like a 5-minute drive away from there. But yeah, it's what we're aiming for is an inclusive kind of party. So it's a ball. Everyone attends. We're just going to have lots of fun, lots of dancing, lots of... There's going to be lots of photo opportunity. I've got a professional photographer coming in. We've got obviously the string band with the modern music spun into the old style. We've got games. There's going to be photo opportunities. We've got lots of decor. We've got some special guests coming along as well. And a few other surprises. Yeah, there's a lot of things going on. Yeah. We want everyone to come on. So we don't want people to feel like, oh, I don't know how to dress Regency. As I said, upcycling, just making a little bit of an effort to look like a character from a show or just a little bit of fun, basically. That's what we want. We want to have a lot of fun.
Yeah, that sounds really fun, to be honest.
Yeah, that sounds great. I think, as I was mentioning earlier today about all the amazing costumes and things that you can see on Instagram, which is great, but it also can feel daunting for people who, you know, find historical costuming overwhelming, or they don't know where to start, or they think it would be too expensive, that sort of thing. I think this is a great way for people to get started or just to feel like they can take some of the things that they have, or like you said, upcycling and be able to come along and dress up in a way that suits them.
Yeah, definitely. And that is the big thing. A lot of balls that you see, I'm sure people are quite terrified. And do you want to spend that much money and investment on making a clothing and you turn up and you hate it? If you're not sure that you really want to do it, then this is a great opportunity to come along. And you're talking about all the people on Instagram with those fabulous dresses. I look at it quite often and I get very overwhelmed. And I think, how have they even done that? So it is, Instagram is one of those places, isn't it, where it's not all real life. Yes. A lot of it is fake. And some people are just insanely creative and talented on what they do, but not everyone is. And we do what we love to do. It's the big thing. I'm going to make a confession. I used to be quite a historical snob, I'm going to say. And it's really bad to say it. That I'd watch a TV program like, I'm not watching this because that is absolutely inaccurate. Oh. And I know, it's awful, isn't it? And the Bridgerton came out and I was like, oh my God, look at that. And then when I watched it, I was like, oh my God, my whole life changed. I mean, why was I a snob? Why did I care that much? I have no idea, but that's the whole thing, like inclusivity and just having a lot of fun. I'm definitely not that person anymore.
So my kind of background is a little bit more into like science fiction, fantasy, that kind of thing. And so you see it a lot in those kinds of circles where people get very protective over the things that they liked. And then they're like, hang on a minute, that thing is close enough to be in this area, but then it's also not right. And you kind of, yeah, there's this protectiveness that comes out. So I do understand why that kind of thing comes out when people, you know, watch things that are near and dear to them.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it takes a bit of effort, I think, to jump out of that, though.
Yeah.
And then when you do, though, the amount of opportunities are outrageous. I mean, like, I am so looking forward to making all these outfits, which are going to be absolutely wild.
Yeah.
Whereas before, I would have made a black silk Regency coat, and I would have been like, it's a bit of a yawn fest, isn't it? And now I'm going absolutely wild, and it's great. Like, I love
it. Yeah, yeah. Lots of new opportunities, try lots of new things, and adding diamonds to your outfit. I mean, that sounds pretty fantastic, to be honest.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing it.
I keep changing the fabric choice, but the diamonds are staying. In one way or another, they are going to be covered in diamonds, so everyone will definitely need to see it when it's finished.
Amazing. Amazing.
Well, we're looking forward to this ball.
Oh, thank you very much. Yes, so am I. Yeah, I really can't wait. I can't believe how close it is now as well.
Well, thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, yeah, thank you so much for having me. Honestly, it's been a great chat. Yeah, I've loved it.
And we will add the information about your ball. And I know there's an Instagram account as well for it. So we will be adding those details in our show notes so that our listeners can know exactly when and where the ball is and to hopefully attend.
Is there anything that you'd like to shout out just at the end here? Any kind of thing where people could find you?
Yeah, definitely. So my Instagram name is The Backstitch Boys. And the ball Instagram is The Bridgetown Ball. I mean, it's original, isn't it? find us along there. But it's both on Instagram.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you again.
So that was really fun. I feel like interviews are going to be a fun thing for us to do in the future, maybe. I'm excited for next month's episode. That's going to be with Dr. Zoe Chadwick. She is going to take us all the way back to season 1, where we're going to explore disability in the Regency era. So if you remember, the Duke, Simon, had a speech impediment in season 1. And if you remember, his father was very harsh on him for having this speech impediment. He was having to learn how to correct his speech so that he could be in polite society. And so we're going to talk with Zoe about what it would have really been like for people in the Regency/Georgian era to live with disabilities and how people would have treated them, medical procedures of the day, that sort of thing. Life in general for people with disabilities. It's a really informative episode. We recorded it all the way back in season 1 and just haven't been able to release it yet. So we're really excited to be able to release that and to talk with Dr. Zoe Chadwick. So we have sneak peek videos today that have been released of Bridgerton. So we're in the month of February now, and we have 2 clips that have been released today for season 3 of Penelope and Colin, which seems very exciting. One looks like it's like the beginning of a very steamy scene where they like look at each other and they're both like, you know, breathing very heavily, like, oh my gosh, you're here and I'm here and we're here together. And then the other one is where he's teaching her how to flirt, and then they're accidentally like actually flirting. I haven't told you about this yet, but I'll have to show you. It's quite cute. So I'm excited about the new season. Yeah, they've mentioned that on Valentine's Day they're gonna give us like a proper sneak peek, which,
well,
perfect day to do it.
Yeah, I won't be watching that one. Sneak peeks are other names for spoilers, and we know my views on spoilers. Ban them.
I keep forgetting that you
ban,
don't.
Ban,
I love
ban.
Sneak. I'm going to watch every sneak peek from now until May.
I know you are, because you're one of those, you know, basically you are the fish that they are catching with the bait.
Well, it just makes me want to watch it more.
No, it spoils and ruins the surprise.
Oh, we're never going to see eye to eye on this.
No.
Well, thank you for listening to this episode of Regency Rumors. Goodbye.
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 Goodbye. Bye.
Goodbye.